and journalist out of Seattle, Washington. Dr. Baroud, welcome to the conversation here in our rolling coverage. Your thoughts on Iran's very strategically delayed but yet nevertheless imminent response to Israeli aggression in the region with last night's barrage of missile attacks at Tel Aviv.
There's definitely a collective sighing in the Arab world at this point. I mean, in the Muslim world, throughout the world, there was a lot of fear that if an Iranian response does not come to press the reset button on all of this and to restore deterrence, then Netanyahu would continue with his victory lap, where he's basically has been for about 10 days now, celebrating what felt to many Israelis as the beginning of victory. After a whole year of setbacks, outright defeats, humiliations, undermining their most celebrated elements of power, the intelligence, then the military, then the strategic losses that were happening at a regional and a global level, normalization has been marginalized, if not completely removed from any discussion regarding Israel and Israel's relationship with the Middle East and so forth. Now, Netanyahu, for a while, until the minute that this attack started, and I'm not talking here as a military expert, I am talking from a strategic point of view. 1 minute before the attack started, Israel felt that it was about to return to the path of victory. In fact, the expansion of the government of Benjamin Netanyahu, the joining of Gideon Saar, the fact that those who stood in opposition of Netanyahu for such a long time, you know, Lapid, Gantz, and others, are now pretty much, you know, on his side as far as the war on Lebanon is concerned, because Israelis love to feel victorious. They love that kind of triumph, and they quickly forget about all of their woes and all of their problems and all of their divisions, because everybody is going to be pushing everybody else out of the way to claim some kind of victory, all in anticipation of the next elections, whenever these elections are going to happen. So it really did seem that there was something fundamental that has changed in the relationship between Israel and the axis of resistance, something that Israel could not achieve for a whole year. Then this happened, and now Israel, of course, is denying that it hit strategic areas and most of them were intercepted. Netanyahu declared that this was a failed attack. What failed attack? We all watched it. Children in the Gaza displacement camps were dancing and chanting and clapping as they were seeing the missiles falling on Tel Aviv. So the question is, why is Israel denying this? Why did the Pentagon declare that this operation or this Iranian attack was thwarted? I mean, we know it wasn't thwarted. We know it hit its targets. So why are they saying the opposite? Because they do not want to escalate. Because they know that Iran has showed a degree of audacity, of boldness, of bravery, if you will, which means that Iran is ready for more escalation, shall Israel decide not to be deterred and not to find a way out of the mess that it created for itself in Gaza, in Lebanon, and elsewhere. One last thing I'd like to say regarding your point. I just feel like the language that was used, the political discourse emanating from Tehran tonight, was very, very important. Because what they said, this was a retaliation for the assassination of Palestinian leader Ismail Haniyeh. Check. But they also said it's a retaliation for the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, which means that what the Iranians are now saying, that this is not just about Iranian territories. It's not about its Iranian sovereignty and the integrity of the Iranian physical and political and strategic spaces. It is also about Lebanon. So this is very, very important, and I'm sure that the discourse analysts within the Israeli government are now studying these statements very well, knowing that Iran has declared that what happens in Lebanon is also its business, the same way that what is happening in Palestine is also its business. This is extremely, extremely strong response from Iran. I know many are going to try to undermine it, including some in our region, unfortunately, but it's not going to change the fact. History was indeed made today.
And Dr. Baroud, you mentioned the characterization of Iran's operation reminiscent of language toward the promotion of de-escalation, or at least a stop to an escalation. But where has U.S. leadership been for the last few weeks as the regime has pushed for nothing but escalation in the region, giving up ample opportunities at a ceasefire to put an end to the onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, choosing instead more death, destruction, and expansion of escalations into Lebanon, Doctor?
That the U.S. and Israel are two separate entities with two separate sets of it. They are essentially the same entity, and they behave according to the same agenda, and largely they have similar strategic goals. Israel needs the United States in order for it to function. Israel is like a bully that needs a bigger bully to protect him. The United States serves as the insurance company that tells Israel, do whatever you want, and we are going to here to cover the damage, right? For the United States, Israel is also critical, because Israel is the, you know, the flexed muscle of the United States in the region. Without Israel, American plans, American hegemony, American political intrigues will not prevail. I mean, if the United States would lose to other big competitors, namely China and Russia and Iran as a regional power. So they need each other. The difference between both of these entities is that Israel is leading a more extremist version of existing American foreign policies. Israel wants to see a kind of a hastened American strategy being implemented in the region, total hegemony, forcing the normalizations on the Arabs. I mean, if you watch Netanyahu's last speech at the United Nations General Assembly, he wasn't saying we extend our hands and friendships to our Arab, you know, potential Arab allies. No, no, he is saying that they will. It's an imposition. Imagine someone is there to threaten imposition of normalization, diplomatic ties. It's either that or what happened to those, you know, pesky Iranians and Lebanese and Palestinians is going to happen to you. It was a language of a bully. But on the other hand, the United States does not want to see total escalation that is going to lead to a total war that it does not want to fight. It is unable to rein in Israel, but at the same time, it is unable to retreat entirely from the scene, because it also stands to lose if it does so. So it's being dragged by Netanyahu in every possible direction, fighting wars they don't want to fight. And that's the pathetic language coming from the Pentagon today, that we thwarted the operation. You didn't thwart anything. You are just worried, or you are scared. If you would say, no, the operation was a success, it means that you have to do something about it as the United States to restore your power in the region. And there's very little, at least not at this stage, that the United States can do.
And that's a good point, Doctor. And I'd like to put that same question, if I could, to our colleague here in our Tehran studios, Kiarash Pur Nemati. Kiarash, how do you see, you heard Dr. Baroud's take on this, how do you see the relationship and how it impacts things on the ground, especially in West Asia, between U.S., the Joe Biden administration, and that of Benjamin Netanyahu and his cabinet? We hear a lot of rhetoric that there are serious friction between the two. Is it for public consumption, Kiarash, or are there serious divides there? And if so, why do we still see the influx of weapons into the regime, where the U.S. has so many tools it can employ to curb Israel's adventurism and its violence in the region?
Well, thank you for having me. I believe that the Democratic Party might need a ceasefire up until the election time, because they might need to use it for the for getting more votes from the people that they will vote for them because of the ceasefire. As you can see, what is happening in the United States of America will show that to you as well. But I believe that Netanyahu and Trump are doing something else here. I believe that there is this ongoing thing between them that they want to, I believe Netanyahu wants to do something before the October and the elections of the United States of America, so Trump will be more likely to win, because as it was shown in his last period, Trump gave a lot more money, a lot more support to the Israeli lobby. And you could also see the Israeli lobby playing a hand here. I believe that the previous president in the United States of America, who called the Israelis and told them to stop, in what was happening in Lebanon, was Ronald Reagan. And ever since then, I'm pretty sure that the Israelis made whatever it took so they will never get the same phone call from any U.S. president ever again. And this is what we are seeing right now. A genocide is taking place. Hundreds of thousands of people are affected by it across the region. And Joe Biden cannot stop this. We all know that the genocide in Gaza cannot continue without U.S. support, without the Western support, but they don't, so that is right.
I hereby declare that the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps and the armed forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran are fully prepared, both defensively and offensively, to respond with much greater intensity to any repeated aggression. If the Zionist regime, which has gone mad, is not restrained by the U.S. and Europe and continues its crimes or acts against our sovereignty and territorial integrity, an operation many times larger than tonight's will be carried out, and all their infrastructure will be struck. We hope that the U.S. will abandon its past approach and stop this criminal regime so that peace can be restored in the region.
With the permission of Almighty God, in revenge for the blood of the martyr and the warrior Ismail Haniyeh, as well as the blood of the commanders and the great leader of Hezbollah, the great fighter Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and the brave commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, General Abbas Nid Furushan, and also in revenge for the blood of the innocent children of Gaza and the oppressed and resilient people of Lebanon, we are launching Operation Two Promise the Second.
Kirash, if you could, why do you feel the Israelis have chosen, Kirash, the path of more death and more destruction and more escalation at every juncture? Well, where it was before them, the opportunity of some kind of narrow roadway to peace and a possible restoration of calm to the region.
Well, I believe there are different reasons for it. One of the most important reasons for that one is what happened to the Israeli side on October the 7th. 1 year ago, Israelis were slapped so hard that they still cannot figure out how to get their heads around what happened. They failed militarily, they failed in terms of security, and that was a very big failure for them. So they are still trying to balance what happened, and they are failing in all the other terms. So I believe that what they are adopting is like a madman principle. But I will attack anyone that I can see. I'm really mad at whoever comes in my way. And, for the previous weeks, they have been throwing a lot of stones. But I believe the Iranian side reminded them that they live in a glass house. And I believe that it was a very good movement from the Iranian side to balance the threats made by the Israelis against them. Now, to show why Israelis, are failing at the campaign, as I just said a moment ago, they tried very much to eliminate Hamas. They failed. They tried to stop the Hamas side, the resistance, to stop the rockets firing at them. They again failed. They, escalated the war between them and Hezbollah, the Lebanese side. They failed again, and they are still failing at what is happening between them and the whole resistance. So that is why they are adopting the, as I call it, the madman principle.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News. We'll be right back.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The embattled regime in Tel Aviv has faced a strategic defeat in Gaza and Lebanon. In intensifying its war crimes against Lebanon's population, the regime seeks to weaken Hezbollah and coerce the Lebanese resistance into withdrawing from the border area. The regime may be hoping to deflect attention from its disastrous military campaign in Gaza and cut the link between the two fronts and potentially seize a refugee crisis in Lebanon as a means of pressure against Hezbollah. However, these goals appear unrealistic as the resistance movement continues to respond by targeting significant military infrastructure of the Zionist regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the second part. Press TV wrote, "The Zionist project seeks to destroy everything that stands in its way as a part of its self-defense and defense of the collective West which it represents, and it will not stop. Even a year into the Israeli genocidal slaughter of Gaza, there has been no meaningful response from the international community. Earlier this year, researchers proposed a conservative estimate of at least 186,000 deaths. Already before October 7, the year 2023 had been the deadliest on record for Palestinians. The international community's inability to intervene in Palestine throughout the decades due to the imbalance of power within UN institutions and the ongoing hegemony of the United States has created the conditions and infrastructure that allowed the Israeli regime to carry out this genocide and commit unspeakable crimes." The United States and its European proxies continue not only to shield the Israeli regime from any accountability, but also to provide an entire discourse of justifications and euphemisms, while making sure that the regime can continue its crimes unhindered, both in Palestine and Lebanon. While these dynamics are worth a detailed analysis, the root cause is racism. The Israeli colonial project has been established as a European outpost and racist apartheid regime in Western Asia and can only exist in its current form through the continuous infliction of violence against the indigenous people and any form of meaningful resistance that could threaten the success of this colonial project. An entire diplomatic discourse around an alleged ceasefire has been constructed in the West and has largely served as a rhetorical means for the United States in the past month to distract from the actual genocide, while making sure Israel has sufficient time and resources to continue its onslaught. Effectively, the United States regime could stop Israel today and end the genocide.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we shall now break off from our regular programming to bring you live coverage of the events in occupied Palestine and Lebanon. The IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, has carried out a series of retaliatory missile strikes against the occupied Palestinian territories and missiles have been raining down on Tel Aviv and various other districts of the occupied Palestinian territories. We now go live over to Press TV headquarters for our live coverage of the events.
Trying to devour and destroy every Islamic Muslim person in the neighborhood, whether it be Palestine and Gaza and the West Bank or Lebanon or eventually Syria or Iraq or Jordan or Iran or any other nation. That is the strategy of Netanyahu, is to annihilate all of these peoples and cultures. And I think that's coming to an end with Iran's mighty strike. And I think it shows their excellent missiles and targeting. I think it also shows restraint, because no doubt Israel is going to respond with an emotional hysteria and probably fire some kind of action against Iran. I don't think Iran will allow itself to be accelerated or thrown off into any similar tirade. Iran is very strategic. It understands it's enormously important to develop political, diplomatic leverage in the world's nations, because as Israel escalates in its bloodlust and destruction and murder, its political and diplomatic support evaporates and disappears. So as Israel isolates itself and loses all of its support, all of its nations that may even be neutral towards it, as Israel loses all of that, it will become more and more a pariah state. And I think it's very important for Iran and the other Islamic nations to make the BRICS platform meeting in October the stage in which to present that BRICS cannot tolerate any kind of genocide, and every member of BRICS should isolate and boycott everything Israeli. Because if the United Nations won't stand up for justice, then the alternative institution for the United Nations needs to stand up for justice. And that's every day becoming more and more apparent with the BRICS Economic Consortium and Shanghai Cooperation Group. So the kinetic rage of Israel, I think, is going to come to an end. It's very powerful when these Iranian missiles strike malls and markets and restaurants and gas platforms, as well as the military kinetic tanks and aircraft, because it doesn't appear as the same degree of murder as the Israelis do by killing civilians. Iran is targeting the infrastructure of war, the tools of bloodshed, and it is also striking at the very economy of Israel. So I do think this is going to cause a domino effect, an avalanche of inevitable political and economic disintegration in Israel. And I think you will also see a lot more independent shooting activities, as we saw earlier. I think you'll see a lot more martyrs and people stepping in and taking it to the streets, inside the streets of Israel, which again will accelerate the Israeli strategy of war and quicken it to a strategy of ending its conflict, ending its aggression. And that's really the goal, is to end Israel's aggression and contain it and quicken the removal of Netanyahu, so that they can never pursue this policy of genocide again.
Let's also bring in Press TV's Robert Nlakish, who's joining us from Calgary. Robert, welcome to the program. Let's start off just how we started with our guest in San Francisco. I want to get your opinion on how successful Iran's Operation True Promise 2 was. It was carried out against the Israeli regime in retaliation for the crimes that they've been committing in the region, and also the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Iran, the assassination of IRGC commander Neil Fourouchan, and of course the assassination of Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. Also, does this operation and its success expose the failure for the Israelis, which I believe can no longer boast their military superiority, and it goes for the U.S. as well, which has showed that it can't fully protect Israel?
Well, what the strikes did certainly achieve is to debunk the myth of the Israeli air defense systems that they achieve 99%, or in other cases 90% effectiveness ratings, that they shoot basically every single missile coming at them out of the sky, and that Israel is invincible. That's what it. That's the blow that has been dealt. The primary blow that we know has been dealt to the Israelis, of course, as well, taking out air bases is significant. It does as well make things more difficult for the Israelis. We don't know yet how many F-16s or F-35s have been destroyed, perhaps, or what parts of these bases were collapsed, whether the runways were damaged significantly. We don't know all of those details yet. They have not emerged. We're hearing reports of all different things. But most certainly as well, on another level, the missile impacts were filmed by the settlers, and of course as well by Palestinians in the 1948 territories, and also Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, who were overjoyed by what they were seeing, that finally Israel was being dealt a blow. And of course, to see, to witness, and for the world to witness dozens and dozens of ballistic missiles hitting their targets and the air defenses being useless here was a real blow to the Israelis. However, they will muster some kind of response. What has happened here is that in the past few weeks, Israel had managed to turn the tide of the conflict and take the strategic initiative by committing its acts of treachery, its reckless acts, which threatened to drag the entire region into a wider conflagration. It has, in many ways, achieved that. It is at a state of war with Lebanon right now, and there can't be any denying of that. Right now, it has attempted to penetrate the Lebanese border. We know that Hezbollah had combated an attempt to do that not too long ago, and they're still transporting the dead and injured to hospitals in occupied Haifa and other areas. But there is an open battle that has been opened up by the Israelis for their actions. Iran's move has now put them on the back foot. It has now put the axis of resistance regionally on the front foot, and it has turned the tide of the conflict, which is now at a regional level. Israel now has to do something extremely creative and most likely extremely deadly to civilians in order to level the playing field here. However, that might be difficult for them to pull off.
Staying with you, Robert, give us your perspective on the reactions that we're seeing right now. We have some of the footage that we were showing on the screen just a moment ago about the celebratory demonstrations that were taking place out on the streets in various cities. We saw people celebrating in Gaza, people celebrating in the West Bank, in Iraq, in Yemen, and of course also major celebrations taking place in Iran. What goes through your mind when you see these celebrations?
The celebrations are very simply because Israel has been getting away with the most heinous crimes for 12 months now. It's been a year almost in a few days since Israel had begun its genocide in Gaza. They've killed a minimum of around 42,000 Palestinians. And of course, those are the lower estimates if we factor in those who are trapped under the rubble, and then also those who have died indirectly. We could be in the hundreds of thousands who have been murdered. On top of that, Israel has continually attacked Syria and has begun attacking Yemen, and of course has launched its murderous assault on Lebanon, killing thousands now, we believe, over 1,000 innocent civilians in Lebanon, many of whom are still not, their bodies are still not been recovered from under the rubble. And of course, these acts of terrorism, like the pager and walkie-talkie explosion attacks, followed by the assassination of most of Hezbollah's senior leadership, including the martyrdom of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. And these are strong blows to everyone in the region. These, of course, combined have been a year of suffering and a year of watching Israel get away with all its crimes with full U.S. backing and not be checked by the United States, because the United States fully backs this. The United States has deceived all the nations in the region time and time again, claiming that it cares about getting to a ceasefire with Gaza. It doesn't. It will not restrain Israel. In fact, Israel is fighting on behalf of the United States and its agenda in the region. And so when the region watched as missiles finally rained down on Israeli military facilities, there was a moment of euphoria, because it felt like the tide was finally turning and that Israel was being dealt a blow for all of the acts that it was committed, including inside of Iran itself. And this is, you know, the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh was not the first on Iranian soil, you know well. We could go back to 2020 as well, with the assassination of Qasem Soleimani in Iraq, and the Israelis all but admitted to having a hand in that. But we know as well with the assassination of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh as well in Tehran, that also occurred in Tehran at the hands of the Mossad. The Israelis have been carrying out assassinations like these for years of people to do with the Iranian nuclear program, peaceful nuclear program, and of course as well people like the Palestinian resistance figures. This is nothing new. So I believe that when people witnessed this, they were overcome with joy, because the tide had been turned. This is a regional battle, an open conflagration, and now people feel like finally the Israelis are being dealt a blow that perhaps could force them eventually, if this escalates down the road, it forced the Israelis to accept a ceasefire and to end and close this conflict. If not, it could escalate further and there could be greater implications for the Israelis.
Scott Bennett in San Francisco, our guest Robert in Lachish in Calgary, says that the tide has been turned now. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think it has turned. It's very important, though, to be very highly sensitive to the information narrative at this point. The kinetics are obvious. Iran has a vastly superior missile technology and capability. It has Yemen on its side. It has Lebanon on its side. It has Iraq on its side. It has Turkey even on its side to an extent. So it has the military components and has been extraordinarily effective at defeating Israel and the United States and its propaganda of being able to defend Israel. However, there is a very important diplomatic informational narrative to be shaped and controlled. And I think that is very critical to keep the momentum and the positivity on Iran's side. And it should be this conflict, this containment strategy. Again, this is not about an annihilation of Israel or every Jewish person, as the Western media is desperate to try and define this as. This is an act of containment to protect civilian lives who were innocently destroyed in Lebanon, and civilians in Palestine and Gaza who are innocently being destroyed and murdered. This is an act finally to contain that. And President Putin of Russia, who has instructed the Israelis to get out of Lebanon, Russia and President Putin also need to be made part of this overall development of a narrative that this is the free world, the decent moral world, rising up to an indecent, immoral, insane empire of lies and hegemony, which Israel and the United States have tried to force upon these nations for 20 years, so that it becomes more and more apparent that Iran is not alone, and Lebanon is not alone, and Palestine is not alone. The Islamic world is not alone. In fact, the Islamic world is united, but so must other nations be for economic development and prosperity in BRICS, the North Korea, China, all of the nations, with Russia being, I think, the fulcrum point at the balance between all of this, because Russia is an interlocutor, a liaison between the Christian world, the Christian North, and many other countries, and the Islamic world. So it's important to shape this narrative in a very positive, profound, reasonable, cool-headed, rational, strategic frame of mind, so that it can't be turned into a scare tactic that Iran is coming after the West. They're already desperately trying to create this narrative that Iran is targeting President Trump and that they're trying to assassinate President Trump, all of which are lies. If anything happened to be President Trump, it would be because the Israelis are going to try and kill him to try and trigger this false event to try and get the United States more embroiled directly in this conflict. So that's why it's very important to control the narrative and to constantly say, are you ready for diplomacy now? Are you ready for peace talks now? Are you ready to cease and desist now? Are you ready for a ceasefire now? Iran always extends the hand and the fig leaf of peace and ceasefire under the condition that Israel stops its genocide. We're prepared to immediately put all weapons down if Israel puts its weapons down. And that narrative, combined with Iran's superior missile technology and the superior numbers, is the winning ticket to victory. Again, I do think this is the turning point where Netanyahu will only become weaker and more isolated, like Hitler in the bunker in World War II.
Robert and Lakish, let's talk about the effects of Operation True Promise. Of course, both operations, True Promise 1 and True Promise 2, they change some of the equations in West Asia, in the opinion of many experts and observers. Experts are saying that, words that also you reiterated earlier, that the tide has turned. There's been a major shift in the region. Can you elaborate on that for us, the ramifications and the repercussions of these two anti-Israeli retaliatory operations?
Well, you asked as well about Operation True Promise, the first one. So I believe that it's a good place to start with looking at the first operation and how we got to where we are today, and how that came about. The Israelis were continually assassinating leading members of the IRGC inside of Syria since the early months of the war in Gaza. They had continually waged these assaults without any significant response, and that was due to the fact that Iran sought to de-escalate, to achieve a ceasefire, that Iran was being strategic in that way and sought to end the genocide in Gaza and to put the region on a new course. However, when the Israelis decided to take it a step further and to bomb the consular segment of the Iranian embassy inside of Damascus, it was clear that something greater had to be done. There had to be an action taken. Operation True Promise 1 was essentially a warning to the Israelis that if we want to hit, we can hit you, and we can hit your most sensitive military sites, and you can't do anything about it. Keep in mind that 72 hours of warning was given for them to prepare the airspace. It was clear the fighter jets were in the sky. The United States, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Jordan, and some with some help as well, we hear from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, all worked to combat that first operation, yet still missiles got through and hit their targets. After that, the Israelis continued escalating. They underwent a number of escalatory measures, which perhaps culminated with the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh, which occurred straight after, just hours after the assassination of Fouad Shukr, a leading Hezbollah commander in Beirut. After that, there was again a period of waiting and negotiation and chasing ceasefires. And of course, we hear a lot of different talk about the discussions that Iran was involved in during that time. With the actions that were taken recently inside of Lebanon, it has become very clear that Israel is prepared to go all the way in order to sow chaos and to achieve a regional conflagration, which will end with the United States coming in, but on its terms. It wants to carry out these sorts of assassination strikes, special forces raids, booby-trapped telecommunication devices, anything it can do to decapitate the leaderships, whether that be of Hezbollah, or perhaps maybe we've heard threats through certain communications about the Syrian leadership from the very start of this war, privately communicated that they would try to perhaps kill the Syrian leadership. These threats seem to have materialized in the case of Hezbollah, and the Israelis began terror bombing using the Dahiya doctrine, Lebanon, massacring civilians. At this point, it has become very clear that the Israelis are not going to stop. The diplomacy with the United States is not going to work at this point because they're not willing to come to the table. And that unfortunately, the Israelis are going to keep on pushing this. They will keep on carrying out assassinations. They will keep on bombing and they will keep on killing until which time that they are forced to stop. Unfortunately, that is the trajectory that the Israelis are on. Unfortunately, the United States government does not have any sense and wants to stop them. Unfortunately, diplomacy has failed again and again and again and again. And the door is always, of course, open for this. But this new operation has now put it's changed the tide. The axis of resistance has the strategic initiative. And from here, we will see how this battle escalates. Unfortunately, it will have to escalate before it de-escalates. And Israel will have to be put in its place because as long as it's not, unfortunately, the United States is not going to stop it and it's going to continually escalate. Now, we have seen that there is a change in the dynamic. We have seen that Israel has been dealt a blow. And we will now have to witness what the Israelis decide to do. Do they open up a regional war? Do they decide to go all in with an attack on Iran? Or do they decide more killing of civilians and assassinations in order to try and get again on the front foot in this ongoing battle? We have to watch and we have to see. But at the same time, the Israelis are committed to escalation. Netanyahu is committed to escalation. And make no mistake, the United States is fully behind Netanyahu. And his intelligence community, his military, his society, the opposition and the government are all fully with what he is doing to Lebanon. They may have some disagreement about Iran, for sure, because they're dealing with a foe. In that case, which can inflict major devastating damage to them if Israel chooses to do the same and act in a reckless way towards Iran, they're going to be somewhat calculated there. But Netanyahu, for his actions in Lebanon, has received overwhelming support and support from his own population. He is going to go ahead and he is going to continue those similar kinds of acts, as many as he can pull off. And that is where we are heading. But right now, this has changed the entire game. This has changed the picture. So we now wait and see what is in store for the region.
Scott Bennett, how do you see the massive support for Iran's operation, the support that Iran received for exposing Israel's myth of invincibility not once but twice, minus the U.S. and other accomplices of the Israelis? Almost all regional countries have expressed support for what Iran has carried out.
Well, you saw that in the United Nations when countries were walking out en masse. You've seen that around the world celebrating this strike. And I would say your other guest's comment about Israel or the Israeli people and citizenry in absolute support of Netanyahu is correct as of yesterday. As of today, I think Netanyahu's popularity is going to be significantly chilled and begin to cool, especially if more of these similar strikes follow, because the Israelis are not prepared for 24 hours a day air sirens going off. They're not prepared for the type of things that Palestine and Lebanon have been subjected to. They're not prepared for their coffee houses and delicatessens and gay nightclubs and shopping malls being put out of commission. And that will cool their support for Netanyahu, who is arrogantly and deceitfully promising them absolute nothing but roses and absolute victory. I think that is a complete lie. And I think it's important for Iran to also state and message and communicate to the Israeli people, we are not the bloodthirsty murderer Netanyahu is. We're giving you 24 hours or 48 hours to get out of Israel, to close your bank accounts, to buy an airline ticket, to sell your house or get out of your business, to spare your life. We don't strike in the middle of the night. We don't strike and blow up your cell phones, although we could. We're giving you a chance to leave, because the number one thing that Netanyahu and the Israeli government fears is the people of Israel leaving. That is the number one terror that Israel and Netanyahu and his parasitic government fear most, is that people will begin to sell their homes and go back to Russia, go back to Canada, go back to America, go back to Europe, go back to Australia. And that can and should happen as escalation develops, which I think we will see escalate over the next week. Israel will respond with a mad dog ferocity, completely devoid of any reason, no moral restraint. It will behave hysterically, uncontrollably, and that will then be met on Iran's timing and Iran's choosing, perhaps coordinating a strike with Yemen, coordinating a strike with Lebanon and Syria and elsewhere to strike from multi-directions in a phased strategy that has 10 times the damage that yesterday's raid did. So this is combines a controlling of the narrative to position Iran in a positive light, and the Islamic response is a positive containment of madness with the superior military surgical technology and the surgical strikes of the economic heart of Israel and the military industrial complexes of Israel. That is the key. Avoiding the civilian deaths generates a degree of neutrality towards Iran. Striking the economic heart is the key to defeating Israel very quickly. And I would say, inevitably, this notion that Israel can survive inevitably and will be provided weapons by the United States, I think that's a fallacy as well, because if the United States is so reckless and stupid enough to think that it can ride cavalierly into this episode and provide aircraft carriers or C-17s full of new missiles and weapons, I think those planes will be shot out of the sky, maybe by the Russian air defense systems. And I think the ships will be sunk in the sea. And I think Israel's gas complexes and its fuel depots will be struck. And Iran, of course, has the capability of communicating to Qatar and Saudi Arabia that they need to stay out of this and certainly not assist the Israeli genocide, or else their bases and oil refineries will be targeted and the Persian Gulf could be shut down. So no one in the West is prepared for the combination of an economic, diplomatic, and military defeat. But that is precisely where this is going. There is no chance for Netanyahu or Israel to suddenly enlist the use of tactical nuclear weapons either, because that would instantly trigger a response from nuclear powers sympathetic to the Islamic cause, such as Pakistan and others. So nuclear fantasies of Netanyahu somehow being able to intimidate the Islamic world would only quicken the annihilation of Israel. So I do think we're rapidly seeing, as we've said from the beginning, Netanyahu's plans to genocide the Islamic people is actually going to genocide his own government, or I shouldn't say genocide, it's going to collapse and destroy his own government and remove him from power. And I think then you will have the conditions for a peaceful settlement, two-state solution, whatever the overall agenda is. But it's also critically important to say to the Russian government and the Russian leadership, the West and the United States, as they overthrew Ukraine, have tried to do the same thing to Lebanon, to Palestine. So this is part of the same world war conquest agenda that the West has pursued for over 20, 30 years. So now Russia and Iran and the BRICS nations must stand together as an economic unity against terrorism, against genocide, and against world domination, reject the U.S. dollar completely, and stand together in the containment of this plague of terrorism that starts and ends in Israel.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Bennett. That was former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett joining us from San Francisco. We're going to continue with Robert and Lakish, who's joining us in Calgary. Robert, let's talk about this retaliatory operation by Iran in the broader picture.
Okay, pal, take care.
And that's looking at it in the context of the Gaza genocide, which is approaching its one-year anniversary right now. Can Iran's retaliation impact Israel's war on Gaza? At the end of the day, we know that the main objective right now for regional countries is to stop the genocide in Gaza and see an immediate ceasefire.
I believe it could have a significant impact if this escalates, if Israel chooses to go the reckless route and decides to attack Iran in an unprecedented way, and Iran responds immediately with its missile power and actually deals a larger blow to the Israelis. We see another wave of retaliatory attacks, and Iran decides to really show its strength. I believe that the United States at that point would realize Israel is on the road to its own disintegration, and it would perhaps step in to secure a ceasefire on all fronts, and that would be done with immediate effect as soon as they could possibly achieve it. The reason I say that is because the United States is clearly not prepared for a regional war. If it was to involve itself in such a war, it would be devastating. The consequences for the United States, also, of course, it would be devastating for the entire region. We cannot, you know, pretend that the United States cannot inflict horrendous damage and mass death and destruction across West Asia. Of course, it can. However, the way that they portray it, that the United States could just come in and wipe out all the governments and resistance movements of the region is ridiculous. And the United States does not want to involve itself in something like this. If Israel believes it can drag them into something like this, I believe that this conflict will perhaps end sooner rather than later. If the Israelis, however, choose to carry out a number of assassinations and continue with their strategy of assassinating and, you know, blowing up booby trap devices and all sorts of trickery like this, and not engaging in a full scale battle, which they will inevitably lose, then this depends again on Iran's reaction. If Iran will again immediately react with missile strikes to assassinations, for instance, and it happens very quickly, we might see a quick close to this conflict. at the end of the day, the Israelis are only reacting to force. That's the only thing that stops them in their tracks. The United States is not going to do it. Europe is not going to do it. The United Nations, I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu just stood up at the United Nations General Assembly and lambasted the United Nations and called it, you know, a platform essentially for anti-Semites, and that they spew nonsense and, you know, and insulted the United Nations and its institutions. And right after doing that and threatening Iran and threatening every single country in the region, he then ordered massive attack in Beirut, which assassinated Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. So we won't see any end to this conflict there. The United States is interested in ensuring that their Israeli allies come out on top in this conflict by looking as strong as possible. The image of the United States is also degraded, with Israel's image being degraded. When Israel's security establishment, its military, its economy, its leadership look weak, the United States also looks weak in West Asia. It appears weak as well to the Gulf Arab regimes. These Persian Gulf Arab regimes are sitting there, and they're looking for who is showing strength. And that will also impact their decision-making, too, in the region. So there are many things to consider here. The United States want to undermine Iran. They want to hurt Iran. They want to hurt its regional abilities and its alliances. They want to destroy Hezbollah and Hamas, or at the very least deal such a blow to the civilian population, which backs up these national liberation movements, as to put them back and put them on the back foot and ensure that there won't be any sort of pushback against further Israeli adventurism, or not at least a significant one for a very long time. That is the goal of the Israelis and the U.S. government, and it is, they are one of the same. The United States is supplying the bombs. It's joint U.S.-Israeli intelligence that is going into all of these strikes. The U.S. gives the green light to all of these strikes. The idea that Israel is acting independent of the United States is utterly ridiculous. The United States has full support for them, and in the past, the United States would hold them accountable. I appeared here earlier, and I spoke of the fact that in 1982, the Reagan administration condemned at the United Nations Security Council Israel's invasion of Beirut, which resulted later in the murder of 20,000 Palestinians and Lebanese. And another example is when George Bush condemned the assassination of Hamas founder Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, when only 16 civilians were killed. And I say only 16, that's still a horrifying number of people to kill as so-called collateral damage. But if we look at the strike against Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in Beirut, we're talking about 6 residential buildings pulverized with 85 tons of explosives, killing everyone in those residential buildings. That is ridiculously, that's just disgusting, despicable, and not proportionate at all. And the Biden administration, including Kamala Harris, who's supposed to be apparently a more peaceful option opposed to Donald Trump, they openly endorsed it. It's not like they ignored it. No, they endorsed it. So the United States is not going to be rational. The Israelis are not going to be rational. If this escalates and is managed in a correct and sophisticated way, the escalation, by the axis of resistance, then I believe Israel will be forced into a ceasefire by force by the United States, and that will come only when Israel is in a position where it is going to take is going to be dealt a significant defeat that it may never recover from. I believe that will be the only thing that will stop Israel.
Thank you, Robert. Let's bring in Mariam Saleh, our correspondent, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mariam, it's great to have you with us. Let's first of all talk about the latest developments with regards to the Israeli attacks and aggression and massacres that are being carried out in Lebanon. Also, if you may, talk to us about some of the reactions that you've been seeing after Iran's anti-Israel retaliatory operations, Operation True Promise 2.
Well, of course, course, the Israeli aggressions continue. All last night, the southern suburb of Beirut was heavily pounded in several areas. They bombed